The opening ceremony of the 32nd Modern Summer Olympic Games will take place today in Tokyo at midday our time. The Games are a year late, taking place under much restrictions, lots of opposition and a state of emergency in the Japanese capital. Let's cross live now to Tokyo. Morning or afternoon to Des Cahill. Opening ceremony just under 5 hours away, Des. What can we expect?
Well, uncertainty is very much the theme of it, but pageantry is what the opening ceremony of an Olympic Games is about. Tickets for the opening ceremony are normally the most sought after at an Olympic Games, but obviously it's going to be very different here. There is no crowd. The atmosphere will be hugely different, and of course the number of athletes taking part in the parade will also be hugely reduced. Ireland, we're told, will have about 20 members of Team Ireland, including 6 officials taking part. The Rio Olympics had 12,000 athletes and officials taking part. It will be hugely reduced, partly because athletes can only come into the village 5 days before they compete. So lots of them who are competing in the second week are not in Tokyo yet. And the other reason is that some of them will avoid wanting to be tired because they will be standing for hours. So if they're competing the next couple of days, they will avoid it. So there will be small numbers and the parade will be hugely affected. Brazil have announced that only their 2 flag carriers will go, nobody else, just the 2 flag carriers. It's the first time each country has been asked to have 2 flag bearers, a male and a female, the first time that's been done. And we're represented by boxers again. Kelly Harrington and Brendan Irvine will be carrying our flag. The theme of the opening ceremony is United in Emotion, and they're talking about moving forward. Now, it's going to be now based on the COVID epidemic and how people are trying to move on from that, but they had already planned on the same theme before COVID emerged, and it was going to be about Japan moving forward from the Fukushima nuclear disaster in 2011 caused by the tsunami and the nuclear power station hit and 20,000 people died, and they were going to use that theme before COVID emerged. But it will be very different. For the first time ever, Gavin, the cauldron being lit, which is the high point of it, the cauldron will in fact not be in the stadium. Instead, it's situated on Tokyo's waterfront city. And the Olympic oath, which is one of the most symbolic and important parts of the opening ceremony, that is also significantly changed and adapted in order to highlight the importance of inclusion, non-discrimination and equality. And so there's a lot of changes like that. But in terms of the content and the celebration part, obviously that's kept big secret. But the understanding is that in Japan, they will go big time on their traditional technology, video games, etc. So we can expect a great spectacle, I think.
And we'll be talking with a proud parent of one of the Irish flag bearers later. The sport itself has been underway for a few days now, Des. Tell us about what's been happening so far today.
Well, there hasn't been a lot of sport today in that there was morning sessions and now it's all parked for the opening ceremony. But Ireland's first competitors were in action at the Sea Forest Waterway this morning. Sunita Pushpure eased to victory in heat 2 of the women's single sculls. That's the good news. She's one of our medal hope favourites, as you know. She had 8 seconds to spare over her nearest challenger. That race, by the way, also included Kathleen Noble, whose parents are Irish, and Kathleen became Uganda's first ever Olympic rower. She was 5th behind Pushpore and will go in the repechage. Kathleen's parents went out to do missionary work in Uganda and she grew up there. Ireland's other crew in action today was Philip Doyle and Ronan Byrne in the men's double sculls. They'll be disappointed. They were 4th of 4 boats in their heat and they'll be in the repechage tomorrow morning. But back to Pushpore, this was her reaction when she spoke afterwards with Claire McNamara.
I was just focusing on my own race and the start wasn't great, but I have a few more days to work on it. Just executed the race plan, that's it. First race done, delighted.
It's all about getting through at this stage, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Just getting through the rounds and now I'm on to the quarterfinals, and so just going to rest up for a couple of days, do some training and get ready for Monday.
Talk to us about the conditions and the course. How are you finding it?
I was okay. I think the start probably is the trickiest bit. There's a bit of a crosswind there, but it wasn't as bad maybe as we were expecting it to be. So you just sharpen up maybe a little bit on a few bits, but it'll be okay.
Now, I know you've said you have unfinished business after London, after Rio. This is one you really want to fight for and you look like you're in great shape.
Well, I'm not going to think that far. So at this point, it's just focusing on one race at a time and not thinking too far ahead. So that's what we're doing at the moment.
Yeah, well done to Sunita. Now, one of the busiest Irish people in the athletes' village is Irish men's hockey goalkeeper Davy Hart, twice named in the World Hockey Team of the Year. He represented Ireland at the last Olympics in Rio. This time he's here bidding to become one of just four athletes from across the world voted onto the International Olympic Committee's Athletes Commission. Now, given the massive impact of COVID, how does he find the Tokyo village compared to Rio 4 years ago?
I would like to say there's a similar enough atmosphere in terms of, you know, just the nervous tension of athletes before the games gets underway and the excitement that's there. But of course, it is very different. Masks everywhere, hand sanitizer every 5 meters you walk around the village. But ultimately, it's still the same purpose that everyone's here is to compete and to perform for their country at the highest level. From that respect, it's pretty similar. But here at the village, it also seems just that bit smaller and more of a concrete jungle compared to a very tropical setting that was in Rio in 2016.
Yeah. And of course, the numbers would be a lot smaller. Fewer people can be there because of the 5 day rule.
Yes, and also once you finish whatever discipline you're in, you have with that 48 hour window to leave Japan again. So you don't have that overlap of athletes who are just finishing up their events and have the opportunity to go explore Tokyo or maybe go to the other ends of the Olympic Village, which they wouldn't have been doing to save some legs before the games actually started.
You're among 30 candidates for four places on the IOC Athletes Commission. Have we had Irish people on that before, Davy?
No, I don't think there's ever been an Irish candidate. So I would be the first also at this stage to be one of the 30, which is already a very proud feeling to be representing Team Ireland in a bit of a different capacity to being an athlete, like over in Rio 2016. But it's the same thing. I come over here to try and give my best and do my all to try and garner some votes and get elected. And as you mentioned, there's only four spaces, so it is so competitive. And on top of that, there will be some elected to the commission by the IOC themselves. What it's known for is to have athletes at the heart of the Olympic movement. They have been inundated, of course, this last period of 18 months to 2 years with the cancellation of the games and the pandemic with the coronavirus globally. And what it does, it allows athletes to sit at the top table with those decision makers and to allow their voice to be heard. And that's so incredibly important. And it's something that I truly believe in. I'm really passionate about. I also sit on numerous other athletes' commissions, and I'm often one to get involved to have my say, to give my opinion and to listen to my fellow athletes. So something I'm looking forward to try and do. And it would be phenomenal, of course, to be elected. But we'll see how these coming days go. The closing date for the votes will be the 3rd of August, and then the candidates who have been elected will be announced on the 4th.
Is being from a small country like Ireland an advantage or a disadvantage in your view?
You could look at it both ways, but I'm certainly trying my best to connect also with, say, those perceived smaller countries, to offer the voice of the smaller nations and not just those large contingents from America, Canada, Australia. It's really an opportunity for those smaller nations to be heard. But on the other side, having so many connections throughout my own sport in hockey, with hockey being the largest team sport here in the village, I believe there's already 500 potential votes if all the hockey players were to vote. So that would certainly kickstart my campaign.
Good for you. And a final question, Davy. Obviously, we have to ask you about the Irish women's team, who begin by playing South Africa tomorrow. They have a tough task.
Absolutely. You're now playing here at the creme de la creme, the pinnacle of everybody's sporting career, the Olympic Games, and it doesn't get any tougher than this. But I do think that their opening game will be a nice way for them to gently ease their way into the tournament before facing the powerhouses like the Netherlands and Germany. So South Africa tomorrow evening here in Tokyo will be a good start for them, and hopefully they can get on to a really great start.
Yeah, that's Davy Hart and so many Irish athletes in action tomorrow, Gavin. It'll really be underway then. The opening ceremony, as you say, 3.5 hours away.
Des, thank you. That's Des Cahill in Tokyo, and more from Tokyo later in the programme. 7:32, Tommy Mescal has the latest news.
You're listening to Morning Ireland. It's 23 minutes past 8 and it's eerie, it's uncertain, but it's still the greatest sporting event on earth. The Olympic Games officially kicks off at noon today, Irish time, with the opening ceremony in Tokyo. Let's cross live to Japan now to Des Cahill. And Des, the Irish athletes underway overnight, and you'll have details on how the rowers got on shortly. But first, you've been speaking to an Irish doctor, I think, with a fascinating link to the Games.
Yeah, an extraordinary link, Louise. He really is central to what has gone on, and he's played a huge role in how the Tokyo Olympics planned their way through the epidemic. His name is Dr. Brian McCluskey from Derry, a former director of global health with Public Health England. Then he became director of the World Health Organization's Collaborating Centre on Mass Gatherings and Global Health Security. His role with the International Olympic Committee led to him becoming, as I say, central to dealing with the massive problems of planning for the Games during the COVID crisis.
I've been involved with IOC for a while as part of their public health advisor, and I worked with them for the Rio 2016 Games and some issues there. And then they asked me to do the same sort of work again for Tokyo. But since the beginning of last year, I've been working particularly on them on the coronavirus. And then last August, they asked me to chair an independent expert panel to help plan the countermeasures for the Games this year.
And was there ever a danger that the Games would not go ahead?
We always were aware that the overriding priority was that they had to be safe. And if they couldn't be safe, then they couldn't happen. We always thought we could make them safe. But we always said, if we're not sure, then we can't go ahead, because we have to protect the health of the population of Japan, as well as the people coming to the Games.
And given the Japanese public are clearly unhappy in many cases about the Games going ahead, what would you say to the Japanese public to appease them?
Well, I mean, I can understand why they're nervous, and I can understand the feelings given the situation in Japan. All I can say is that we believe we have done everything possible to make sure these Games are safe. We've brought in a whole range of measures to stop infections coming and spreading either within the Games or between the Games and the local population. We believe they are effective and they are working, and that's why we're picking up the cases that we're picking up now in the first few days. So we've done everything we think that we can do, and we think it will be safe. But we understand the feelings. It's difficult to do this in the middle of a pandemic. It's never been done before.
Now, you say there have been a few positive tests within the village, etc. Were you expecting that?
Yes. I mean, essentially, if I didn't think any of the tests would be positive, then I wouldn't be worth doing the tests in the first place. So, I mean, we're doing tens of thousands of tests across the Games and the athletes. So we always expected that some of those would be positive. I mean, one thing we know about this coronavirus is it does travel well. You know, so we knew people would travel and they might get infected either before they left their home country or just after they got here. And that's the ones that we want to pick up. So we've got testing before people leave their home country, testing at the airport and testing in the village. And each, if you like, of those layers picks up the people who are starting to become infectious so we can manage them and look after them quickly and make sure they don't spread it to other people. But we knew it would happen. The challenge is not to have no cases. The challenge is to make sure the cases don't spread into clusters and spreading events. The numbers we're seeing are actually probably lower than we thought we might see. It's 0.02% positive rate for the testing we're doing, which is actually very low. That's in some ways not surprising, because the group we're testing are probably a group who've been very careful for the last few weeks, because the athletes and the teams do not want to get infected. But it is lower than we planned for, in the sense that we assumed it could be higher than this. So at the moment, the system is doing what it's designed to do, which is pick up those people who are coming into Japan early with potential infection, identifying those and taking them out of the system quickly so they can be looked after and they don't spread to other people.
And what about the decision not to allow spectators attend events? Was that part of your brief?
No, that's a decision for the Japanese government to make. And the IOC is happy with the decision they made. The Japanese government has to make a decision not just about the Games, but in the light of what the population of Japan think is right to happen. And we've seen around the world that different governments make different decisions. That's the nature of governance.
Has it been one of the most interesting projects you've ever worked on?
Yes, it's been fairly exciting, shall we say.
Horrendous how it can affect the world and sport at this level, though.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, and that's one of the things that's been keeping us going is, you know, from our perspective, looking at the position of the athletes who've been doing this training for 7-8 years to get here and perform on the world stage. You know, they put huge effort into it. They've then had to put all the effort into the extra year, you know, mostly in lockdown in various countries to try and keep up their training motivation. And you think if they put that amount of effort into getting here, then it's up to us who organise it to make sure that it will happen if it's at all possible. And we can't take that away from them if there's any way of doing it safely. And that's part of what kept us going.
That's Dr. Brian McCluskey playing a key role here. So COVID, not the only problem for the Olympics. Word coming in the last minute that the rowing schedule may change. Big winds coming in, a technical meeting at the moment, and they're looking at changing the schedule, could be removing all of Sunday's action. So we'll keep you updated on that. But Ireland did have our first rowers in action today, including our medal hopes, Anita Pushpore, who eased to victory in heat two of the women's single sculls. She was just delighted to get the race under her belt.
Yeah, we're finally here. It's been a long year, but at the same time, it went quite fast. So just delighted to see teams doing so well. And this extra year was kind of good in that way. Yeah, we have a massive team here, so it's very exciting comparing to London, so, and even Rio. Can't wait to see what they do.
Yeah, how important has that support been for you, that having the team around you?
Oh, it's great. It's like just, it feels like exactly what home. You just go out, try to beat each other on the water, and that competitive environment is very helpful.
And how are they all back at home in your house with the kids up early watching this morning, do you think?
I think my husband was, yeah, so I want to say hi to my kids and my husband. Hope they're doing well.
So day one done and happy with the start.
Yeah, happy with the start. Day one, take the box, moving on to the next round.
That's Anita. Now we'll keep you in touch with that. Remember that we did also have another crew in action today, Philip Doyle and Ronan Byrne in the men's double sculls. They were disappointed. There were fourth of four boats in their heat. They'll be in the repechage tomorrow morning. And a blow for one of Ireland's leading swimmers. Shane Ryan has had to withdraw from the 100 backstroke. Former Irish Olympian Nick O'Hare is covering the swimming for RTE. He's been explaining Shane's problem to me.
Yeah, so Shane was due to go on a 100-metre backstroke, which he semi-finaled in Rio, but he's had a recurring shoulder issue over the last 3 weeks. He's had a lot of medical attention, and the decision was made, duty of care for the swimmer, but also as well with cognizance on the relay that's coming up, which is the 4x200 freestyle relay, and his other event, the 100 butterfly. So the decision was made not to risk his shoulder, and he's going to go ahead with those other two events.
And how can he compete in the other events and not in the backstroke?
Yeah, so it only hurts him really in the backstroke. So it's a different way of recovering. So you've got a lot more force on your shoulder when you're taking your arm out of the water on the backstroke, because you're lifting your whole arm out, whereas on freestyle or butterfly, it's your shoulder girdle that moves forward, mm-hmm. and then you've a bent arm coming forward. So it's just less pressure.
How big of a blow is that for him, given it's a premium event?
Yeah, personally, I'd say it's a huge blow for him. You know, he was top 16 in the world at the last Olympic Games, and he would have liked to certainly have repeated that performance and hopefully sneaked into a semi-final. But I think it's a mature decision. Like, this is not the end of his swimming, albeit it's the second Olympic Games, and he's 28 years of age. He's got the International Swimming League to think of. He's also got World Championships coming up next year and the year after, indeed. And then, of course, you know, being the team guy that he is, we've got three other guys who are relying on him for the relay. So a very, very mature decision all round.
All right, thanks for that, Nick. And so, Louise, we're awaiting the opening ceremony in 3.5 hours. More than 11,000 athletes from 207 countries are competing for these medals. When the Games were postponed in March 2020, organisers said the Olympic flame could become the light at the end of the tunnel. The pandemic's still raging, but hopefully the lighting of the torch today will offer a glimmer of that light.
Thanks so much, Des. I'll be escaping the light of the sun and watching it on my couch from 11:30 on RTE2, live coverage of the opening ceremony from Tokyo's Olympic Stadium.